Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The Delta variant causing big changes in America, where organized labor stands on the vaccine, a deal on infrastructure, and today on the show, the challenges for journalism and helping immigrants in Chicago. Welcome to the Thursday, July 29th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. Fatima Hussein is going to be our first guest. She is a worker safety legal reporter for Bloomberg Law, and she is president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. Website is WBNG.org. Fatima worked at the Indianapolis Star as well as the Cincinnati Inquirer covering labor and law. She has a law degree. She also previously served as unit chair of the Bloomberg Industry Group Guild, as well as local president of the Indianapolis Newspaper Guild. And she'll talk today about the challenges, and there are many, representing journalists and nonprofit workers. And when I say nonprofit workers, there's good reason for it, because a lot of publications, ProPublica for one, we've had them on the show a number of times, they are a nonprofit media group, and we're seeing more media groups going in that direction. So those working there are unionizing. As the news industry explodes with interest from new unions, how is the Washington Baltimore News Guild handling that? A lot of the digital platforms, and we're seeing this across the board. So this is going to be a good subject to delve into, and we've featured the News Guild and John Schloss on the show a number of times. So we're going to get a nice snippet of what's going on, especially in the Washington Baltimore area, which is pretty much the center of the universe when it comes to politics. So our first guest, Fatima Hussein, on behalf of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. Second guest is Laura Garza. Now, Laura is out of Chicago. She's affiliated with an organization called Arise Chicago, and she's going to explain what that's all about. A little background on her. She was born in Monterrey, Mexico, and at the age of 10, moved to Chicago's Little Village neighborhood. For the past 23 years, she worked for the Service Employees International Union, that was Local 1, and fought for economic justice while centering on racial, immigrant, and environmental justice in her work. She's going to talk about women of color and how they are represented in the workplace and the harassment that goes on. She, by the way, is a former board member of the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. And we'll get into organizing non-union workers during COVID and how COVID, boy, and I talk about this a lot on the show, has changed everything, especially when it comes to organizing. So Laura Garza with the group Arise Chicago, arisechicago.org is their website. All right, with more states considering vaccine requirements for public employees, the president of the AFL-CIO, we're talking about Rich Trumka, was asked this week whether the Labor Federation supports vaccine mandates in the workplace. Trumka said, yes, we do. If you're coming back into the workplace, you have to know what's around you. The remarks come at a time when the COVID-19 Delta variant is spreading rapidly, especially among those not vaccinated, prompting officials to weigh mandates for workers in order to boost vaccination rates and protect the public health. On Monday, New York's Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that the city's municipal workforce would have to be vaccinated or undergo weekly testing. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom said pretty much the same day that his state's employees and healthcare workers would face a similar requirement. Now, The mandates have drawn resistance as well as support from different unions that represent public employees and healthcare workers. A union representing New York City paramedics and EMTs, the Fire Department of New York, EMS Local 2507, they all declared opposition to de Blasio's mandate, saying that the city and the mayor cannot simply disregard the civil liberties of the workforce. The union said any such requirement would be subject to bargaining, and they have a point there. However, a spokesperson for the United Federation of Teachers, which represents most public school teachers in New York City, told the Wall Street Journal that de Blasio's requirement puts the emphasis on vaccination but still allows for personal choice and provides additional safeguards through regular testing. Last week, hospital workers with 1199 SEIU in New York held a rally against a vaccine requirement implemented by New York's Presbyterian Hospital. Force is not the answer. And a mandate forcing people at a barrel of a gun is not right, one protesting worker said. Unions, of course, let's keep this in mind, they have a responsibility to represent their members, and union members are no different from the general population, which a significant share is not vaccinated. However, Trumka said that vaccine requirements would help protect everyone at a time when COVID-19 caseloads are increasing once again. This is what he said. If you come back and you're not vaccinated, everybody in that workplace is jeopardized. And if we don't know if you're vaccinated or not, we can't make the proper accommodations to make sure that you are protected and everybody else is protected. This is a tough one. The National Labor Relations Board has weighed in, and they have not expressly affirmed that a COVID-19 vaccine mandate is a compulsory subject of bargaining. However, precedent suggests it likely would be. In response to the mandate, New York City's largest municipal workers union, District Council 37, they represent about 150,000 city workers, asserted that the city must meet us at the table to bargain while we encourage everyone to get vaccinated and support measures to ensure our members' health and well-being. Weekly testing is clearly subject to mandatory bargaining. That comment from Henry Gerardo, who's the executive director of District Council 37. I want to talk about infrastructure. We are finally getting there. We still got a road to go, no pun intended. But we have a deal. We have a deal. Key senators yesterday announced they reached a bipartisan infrastructure deal, setting up a potential vote to advance the plan as Majority Leader Chuck Schumer rushes to get it through the chamber. We're talking about investing $550 billion in new money for transportation, broadband, and utilities. And here's the breakdown. $110 billion for roads, bridges, and major transportation projects. $73 billion for the power infrastructure, $66 billion for passenger and freight rail, $65 billion for broadband. That's a step in the right direction. Clean drinking water, $55 billion. Public transit, $39 billion. Airports, $25 billion. $17 billion for ports, $11 billion for transportation safety. Electric vehicle infrastructure, $7.5 billion. $1 billion to redesign or demolish the infrastructure that divided communities. That's interesting. You know, we touched on this on the show. Well, we talked with The Nation magazine. And when the federal highway system was constructed, that started in the late 50s when they got the funding. A lot of it happened in the 60s and the 70s. They divided communities, white and black. And it's still that way in a lot of areas. Now, the White House said the bill will be paid for by repurposing unspent coronavirus relief funds, along with what it called targeted corporate user fees, strengthen tax enforcement when it comes to cryptocurrencies and economic growth created by investments. No increase on those making $400,000 a year or more. That's part of other legislation. But anyway, the good news is the polling on this. And a new poll by the Associated Press and the University of Chicago came out saying that 83% of Americans, including 79% of Republicans and 80% of independents, that's a clear majority. They want funding for roads, bridges, and ports. 66% of Americans, including 43% of Republicans, 53% of independents, want to pay for it with higher taxes on corporations. Interesting. We'll see how this pans out down the road. You know there's going to be a whole lot more debate on this. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, the Washington Baltimore News Guild.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to the show. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome a newcomer to the show. Her name is Fatima Hussein. And today we're going to talk about journalism and the challenges of journalists, not just in this country, but around the world. And I'll tell you, it's been rough. It's been real rough. And the pandemic has just made it more difficult. Joining us is Fatima Hussein, and she is with the Washington Baltimore News Guild. Real simple website, WBNG.org. Sounds like a radio station. Fatima is a worker safety and legal reporter for Bloomberg Law and president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. Fatima Hussein, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you bringing me on.
No problem. That's what we're here for. We want to get the word out on labor, no matter who's involved in whatever union and whatever you do. And obviously, you have a very important role. I want to talk about that first. I see you moved around a little bit, Indianapolis Star, Cincinnati Inquirer. Talk to me a little bit about your background. I also see you have a law degree. This is interesting. Can you get some more details on your travels up the ladder here?
Sure. Thank you. Yes, I've done quite a few things. I've been in journalism for the past 10 years. After I finished law school, I was in law school. I edited our newspaper instead of doing law review. I think a lot of people in law school tend to veer towards law review, but I was really into the newspaper. So after having that experience, I really just wanted to get into being a reporter. So after school, I took a job at the Daytona Beach News Journal, which was it's a really small paper. And after getting laid off there, that gave me the first taste of what it's like to be a journalist in America. And not having a union gave me the perspective of what it's like to not have a very good severance. I had worked there for about 3 years and got a $700 severance check. And it was not an experience that I'd want another reporter to have. So I went to the Cincinnati Inquirer. I had a very good experience there as a labor reporter and learned quite a bit about what it's like to be in the labor world. That's not a union covered shop yet, but it really taught me what it's like to just experience labor. I covered a lot of like construction labor jobs and met a lot of people who work at worker centers who are really great people. From there, I went to the Indianapolis Star, where they do have a union, and I was asked to be president of the local there of the Indianapolis Newspaper Guild. And I really liked the notion of like leading a union and kind of revamping a unit and a local and learning about the different kinds of roles that exist. And it was my first opportunity to bargain a contract, and I really, really liked it a lot. But I also wanted to be in a much bigger locale, so I moved to D.C., and maybe about a year into being at the Bloomberg Industry Group, it at the time was called Bloomberg Law, but before that it was the Bureau of National Affairs, which had a shop since 1938. I was asked elected to be the unit chair for Bloomberg. I had done that for about 2 years and then moved on to become president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. So I guess I sort of like started from just learning about labor as a reporter, and now I'm sort of in it. I'm really in it.
That's great. That's a nice journey there. Can you backtrack here a little bit, and especially when you went from the Cincinnati Inquirer, which I believe is a Gannett chain. I think it's still a Gannett chain, which runs USA Today newspapers. And you went from Cincinnati to Indianapolis. So you went from a non-union environment to a union environment. Can you describe how that was different? I'd like to get that perspective, because we have a lot of people. We primarily have a union audience, probably 90%+, but there's still new people coming to hear the show, and plus our podcast, it's expanded dramatically. But if you can kind of reflect on the changes, the difference in environment between the non-union and the union environment, can you speak to that, Fatima?
Absolutely. And I don't want to preach to the choir. I want to definitely share information that could be helpful in all respects. I think that having worked at non-union shops versus union shops, one could definitely see the difference in terms of the contractual rights you have for discipline or representation when you have an issue in the workplace. I would say that sometimes there are union shops or non-union shops where the environment isn't as bad, but you still don't have those protections. At the Inquirer, I had really fantastic editors, which I would imagine would make it kind of difficult to unionize that particular shop. Whereas the place I worked in Daytona Beach was non-union at the time, and I had that layoff experience. I was also brand new to reporting. It seems like in non-union shops, there are quite a few factors that have to exist for there to be the opportunity for organization to be possible. And I would imagine, at least in journalism, that if there's just wild discrepancies in pay, or if there's just an extremely abusive work environment, that's not to say all non-union shops are exactly the same. Some of them are much worse than others. I don't know if that answers the question or sort of tiptoes around what you're asking.
No, it does. No, it does give us a good glimpse. And I think a lot of people that were in non-union environments, they totally understand that. I just wanted to, to share that experience, especially in the journalism field. And journalism, oh, I tell you, it's undergoing so many changes right now. You know that all too well. Before we get into that, though, talk to me about the Washington Baltimore News Guild. How many members in that guild, and are there any like contract negotiations going on right now? Can you bring us up to speed on that?
Yes, for sure. The Washington Baltimore News Guild is a very unique local in the world of News Guild locals. We're one of the biggest locals in the country and for the News Guild, and we're extremely unique in the sense that we've got more than 40 units that we represent. And additionally, we also represent nonprofit workers as well as journalists. And for some time that posed sort of a conundrum because journalists tend to be extremely objective or want to be ideally very objective in how they do their jobs, but also need to advocate for workers' rights. So that's always going to be a conversation that's being had, whereas nonprofit workers tend to be quite a bit more political and are able to be a lot more political about how they want to approach labor. So when I took over, there was a bit of a rift between nonprofit workers and how they viewed the local versus the way that the journalists wanted to lead us into the 21st century. And now I think I've tried really hard and I hope I've achieved the bringing us together and finding a collective goal for all of us to look towards as both journalists and nonprofit workers. So yes, there's a lot of contract negotiation going on. We're trying to hire another staff representative, which we're really, really excited about. If anybody's interested in being a staff representative for the Washington Baltimore News Guild, I hope they'll contact me or our administrator, Seth Parks. This is something we're very, very, very adamant about doing because as we grow, we've grown very rapidly. We do need representation.
Is that posted on your website, that job opportunity?
That will be posted very soon. So okay. If you're interested now, go ahead and reach out to me anyway. We're going to start interviewing individuals.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by what you have done with the News Guild. I mean, you're representing other unions, too. I'm looking at the Postal Workers Union. You represent about a dozen staff attorneys, communication specialists, accountants, programmers, network administrators at the Postal Union, food and commercial workers, SEIU, publications, I see, In These Times, American Prospect. You've really grown. Was this all under your leadership that you were able to forge these alliances?
No, that would be, I mean, a lot of that is from the past, and these are relationships that have existed for a very long time. We have grown quite a bit since I took over as president, but that I would imagine is not due to my leadership so much as all of the activity and people who are really, really interested in joining unions. It does seem like when it rains, it pours. When one organization starts to join or one organization expresses interest, many, many others do as well. Right now, we're really, 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 really excited about the workers at the Washingtonian who decided that they wanted to unionize after their management posted publicly a very insulting op-ed about how they view work from home during the pandemic, kind of threatening workers that if they don't comply, they could become contractors. And those individuals who work at the Washingtonian didn't stand for that and felt like there's no need for their employer to publicly embarrass them and threaten their jobs when they didn't do anything wrong. So there is quite a bit of activity that's proliferating at the Washington-Baltimore News Guild. We're very, very, very excited about it.
I hear you. Message to all those in management and owned companies, keep being nasty, because it's just going to increase union membership. It seems to be happening all around America right now. Fatima, I got to take a quick break here. Joining us on our live line is Fatima Hussein. She's president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild, WBNG.org. You can follow them on Twitter. It's WBNG32035, and that's the local 32035, and the News Guild's affiliated with the Communication Workers of America, one of the many proud sponsors of this show. Laura Garza is going to be joining us later in the show, and she comes to us from an organization called Arise Chicago, dealing with immigration. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. And don't forget, we are available on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just take a minute, do this, sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. Fatima Hussein is our guest on our live line right now, and she is president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild, WBNG.org is her website. Fatima, I want to talk to you about the challenges here for journalism. And this is kind of interesting, too, because we have a lot of organizing going on. We talked about the conditions in various news media outlets. And if they're not going in the right direction, the workers are organizing, especially on digital platforms. I'm seeing a lot of bright spots. But that being said, the industry has been gobbled up by these hedge funds. One of them is, I believe, Alden Global Capital. And the sad part about this is they strip them down. And they do it with so many different companies, grocery chains, factories. I mean, I can go on and on and on, and the workers lose. I'm just wondering where we are in America with all that. And have you ever been in the middle of one of these fights? What's the story, Fatima?
Sure, yes. I have definitely been in the middle of one of those fights personally in my first job in Daytona Beach when the company that was previously owned by Halifax, which was at one point a family-owned company, was purchased by Gatehouse. And immediately thereafter, I was laid off and came my $700 severance check after working there for years. And so I experienced that personally and saw that very often while remaining in journalism. And yeah, it happens all the time. Many, 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 many of my friends have been laid off and have experienced this really terrible prospect. And most of them who have experienced it are now organizers. So there does seem to be a direct correlation with having experienced your company being purchased, getting laid off, and becoming an organizer. That's a very, very common thing in journalism now.
Yeah, and the consolidation in journalism with multi-level platforms. I mean, you got a lot of issues at play, but there's a lot of organizing going on. What do you see happening? And you could speak not just to the Washington-Baltimore area, because I know you're pretty astute on what's going on in the industry. But what do you see for the future of journalism today in America? Because it's been under attack. Journalists have gotten killed. Shamed. I mean, look at the past president here and all the bad things were said about journalists. So is that behind us? Are we turning the corner on that or what?
I think there's quite a few things that are happening in journalism and concurrently a lot of things happening in journalist unions. When it comes to journalism itself, I do see far more smaller shops that are opening up that are owned by journalists, and we should see that as a democracy. Far more individuals who've been in journalism a very long time leave the corporate ownership to begin their own journalism shops. I'm thinking specifically of quite a few in Minnesota. There's a shop called the Minnesota Reformer, which is a new organization, as well as the Sahan Journal, which I see covers primarily minority and I believe it's Somalian or West African immigration issues specifically. And I think that's a really fantastic thing to see journalists go out on their own and open their own news organizations, as opposed to relying on employers that kind of treat them very poorly and don't really reward their great talent. So that's something that we'll definitely see in the future, more people leaving as the work conditions tend to deteriorate. Something I'm seeing in journalist unions, I've seen this for the past year and a half, is instead of simply having a situation where there's a group of people who want to organize, getting a staff rep from a union kind of coming in and organizing everyone, we're starting to see a lot of members of existing shops that are very, very highly organized or already have a contract or have leaders who are really, really great and fired up and want to galvanize people, start to go from their own existing shop as a member organizer to this new shop of people. So you'll have, instead of a rep who might not always understand the needs of a journalist, you're having journalists who are, you know, volunteers go into other shops that are unorganized and start to help them become organized. And I think that's partly due to, you know, unions today are always going to be, strapped for cash, and that's okay. It's a way of trying to alleviate the problem of not having lots of money and maybe not having as much staff rep help who are persistently working on contracts. This is kind of a new method, and I think either it came from John Schloss or it might have come from just something that existed before. But these member organizers are something we're seeing now. I think something we're also seeing is quite a few really, really, really new shops where there isn't a lot of, I don't want to say knowledge of a contract, because these are the people who are crafting the contracts. There are just so many new people that there's really, really, really going to be a hunger for training. At WBNG, we're always trying to think of new ways to train people so that we can ensure that they know their contract really, really well. I would like to see in the future something like the member organizer kind of formula, but done to ensure that members are trained to be reps, because having a shop of really aggressively knowledgeable people who know their contract and are unafraid to enforce the provisions of the contract would be really frightening for all forms of management, no matter whether it's journalism or a factory or anything of that nature.
Fatima, I'd like to speak to you about the nonprofit moves. John Schloes and I talked about this a couple of times because we're seeing a lot of outlets going the nonprofit route. Because face it, I mean, a lot of these newspapers have folded because, well, they've lost a lot of readership and they lost a lot of staff, and they were primarily unionized. They went to a digital platform that's not unionized. And I know that personally because of where I'm located. We record the show in Cleveland, Ohio. Plain Dealer used to be, there used to be 350 people in the News Guild there going back 20 years ago. Now it's gone. They busted the union over there. And Cleveland.com is a non-union shop. And I'm just wondering, that being said, there's a lot of outlets going to the nonprofit staff, so they don't have to deal with that. Do you see that as the future of journalism? What's your point of view on that?
We're definitely organizing, I would say, and I could be wrong, Set Parks can call you and correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been concurrently organizing the same amount of journalism shops as well as nonprofits. I will say when we wanted to bring on a particular shop that's a nonprofit, we can face some pushback because of the affiliation with the AFL-CIO. That's something that I didn't think would be an issue as a union president. A lot of these relationships that are political don't really make a lot of sense to me. I know that as long as a person is in a union, they are better off than not being in a union. So any pushback is sort of unfathomable and unnecessary to me.
I gotcha. Well, there's a lot of challenges out there, and it sounds like you're in the middle. It's almost like you're in the middle of a storm because you are, and you're navigating through the whole thing. But it sounds to me that you have a very strong unit there. And it seems that the future is pretty good and bright in many cases. So my hat's off to you. Any closing remarks here? I got a couple of minutes left. If there's anything that you want to say to our national audience, go ahead.
I just want to say that when I took over, the relationship between the nonprofits and the journalism shops was sort of tenuous, but now it's really, really better than ever because we found out where we commonly have the same issues with our management. So our journalism organizing is best done and has been best taught to us by our nonprofit organizers because we are learning a lot from each other and our relationships are only getting stronger. So whatever you can take from that in your shop, if there's some sort of rift between workers, if you can find a way to look where you have commonalities, it will only make you not just stronger, but quite frightening to management. And I think that's really what we're always trying to achieve.
It's all about solidarity. Yeah. All right, Fatima, thank you so much for what you're doing, what you brought to the show today. Fatima Hussein, president of the Washington Baltimore News Guild. You can check them online at wbng.org. Follow him on Twitter. Twitter handle is WBNG32035, and that's the local they're in. Local 32035, Washington Baltimore News Guild, affiliated with the Communication Workers of America. Thank you so much, Fatima. Let's keep in touch on this issue. It's important that journalists do what they do best. Write the stories, get the stories out there. They often call it, what is it, the fourth estate, trying to keep our politicians honest and government honest. That's not an easy job. You take care and keep up the fight, okay?
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Arise Chicago. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
If you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO, AFL-CIO.org is their website. Let's go to Chicago right now. And joining us on line number two is Laura Garza. Laura came here from Mexico some years ago. She was affiliated with the Service Employees International Union and is now speaking on behalf of Arise Chicago. Might want to check them out online, arisechicago.org. Laura Garza, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's start with your journey to the United States. You were born in Monterrey, Mexico, and when you were 10 years of age, you moved to Chicago. I take it your whole family moved. Let's go back to that time. What happened back then?
I did. I moved to Chicago permanently when I was 10. I actually have a back and forth immigrant story. My grandmother was born actually in Columbus, Ohio, my mother's mother. And so back then it was easy to come back and forth from Monterey to Chicago. And eventually my grandmother married and had my mother in 1950. And when she was 3 years old, she was brought here to Chicago. But like a lot of immigrant families, you know, people send their kids back to visit grandparents. And so my mother fell in love with someone there and left Chicago in her 20s and got married with my father and eventually had four children. Things didn't work out. And so my mom at the time was a resident. It was easy to come back and then brought the family here, my three siblings, my three brothers and I, when I was 10 permanently.
And you all settled in Chicago, the little village neighborhood I'm reading. Interesting.
We did. One of the first Latino neighborhoods, Mexican immigrant neighborhood, primarily in Chicago.
Gotcha. Now, the Service Employees International Union, you were there for, what, 23 years? How did that happen with your travels?
When I graduated from UIC back in 1997, I always was, during college and before college, was really committed to doing community work, and this was just a perfect fit. I had volunteered during college with the United Fine Workers Union when I was 18 and organized onion workers in Brownsville, Texas. And so that's where I got my niche and decided to apply for SEIU Local 46 back then in 1997 and eventually worked for SEIU for 23 years, but recently joined Arise Chicago the past 5 months.
Okay, let's talk about Arise Chicago. What's Arise Chicago all about?
Well, Rise Chicago is a worker center. It's a worker center that really has helped thousands of workers over the last 30 years. It was founded by religious leaders and workers and communities because there was a need to represent immigrant workers at the time. And so, you know, that's a history of Arise. And today we have serviced thousands of workers, mainly around, you know, the major issues that workers come to Arise for is wage theft. And it's interesting because, you know, we see workers from all walks of life, primarily from non-union commercial buildings, manufacturing. We have a unit of domestic workers, so home cleaners, nannies, care workers, and then we also see a lot of workers from restaurants and small construction that come in and ask for our support to fight, you know, workplace injustices on a daily basis.
So do you feel a lot of the immigrants are pretty much taken advantage of? They're figuring, well, they're not well-educated, they're coming from another country, they don't understand the language very well, so as a result, they can rip them off on their paychecks? Is that pretty much what's happening?
That's pretty much what we see, and so that is why we're so committing and doing education and organizing. And, you know, what we tell immigrant communities that regardless of their situation, they have rights. And it's so so great to see once workers feel empowered and they know their rights and they know they could take action and they know that they could go fight for their wages that were stolen from them. It's just great to see. And we have to take the time to educate around labor rights. And that is why we do the work that we do at Arise Chicago, because there's obviously a great need in the immigrant community to give those services to workers.
Well, Laura, you probably know you got to do education on two fronts. You obviously pointed out you got to educate those that are, you know, being taken advantage of, the immigrants. You also have to educate the politicians to stop doing this kind of thing. Have you had any success? And I've noticed this in various cities, too, where they have these anti-wage theft ordinances. Is that happening in Chicago?
Absolutely. Actually, Arise has been one of the leaders in and ensuring that those ordinances pass in Chicago, Cook County. We've been, you know, we actually helped create the Office of Labor Standards in Chicago. You know, a lot of times there's all these government agencies, as you know, that workers could go and file charges, but it's intimidating. And they, you know, and government unfortunately does not do a great job in letting people know their rights. But in Chicago, it's been a game changer with the Office of Labor Standards that was created here a few years ago. And again, Arise really pushed for that with other partners as well, but we were one of the lead organizations. And the city has actually done a much better job in informing people of their rights. And so, yes, we have to do a lot of education with politicians. There's some, as you know, that are good on the issues and support workers and worker rights. But overall, we also need, you know, to make sure that we educate the community. But it's not just our responsibility at the worker centers or unions. It's also government's responsibility. And so passing those ordinances are crucial, particularly during COVID. There was a few ordinances that were passed, you know, anti-retaliation against, you know, workers trying to take off because they're sick or people were dying in these workplaces. And so that was also important and something that we drove during the pandemic.
Laura, I hear you. And we've talked many times on this show about the conditions in America, lack of personal protection equipment, the meatpacking industry. There's a lot of immigrants in that field that were not properly protected and have died as a result of COVID. Laura, if you don't mind, I want to get into domestic workers. And I know you wanted to talk about the Illinois Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. And I bring this up for very good reason, because as you well know, the hotel industry was pummeled, along with many industries, hospitality in general. And as a result, now that they're slowly coming back, they're thinking, well, maybe we don't have to clean the beds every day. Now, that's a scary thought in itself. But that being said, it means they're going to have less workers. And I'm just wondering, is this a point of discussion right now with Arise Chicago? What's your comment on that?
It's a point of discussion just in general. We really don't see a lot of hotel workers that come to Arise Chicago, but obviously are really well connected with the labor movement here in Chicago, and we have heard of that. This is not the time not to be cleaning butts. This is the time where people, they should have more, you know, workers making sure that everything is cleaned and sanitized. And so, again, you know, this is what I would say. Some employers taking advantage of the situation and trying to figure out how they cut costs after coming out of such a dire situation during the pandemic that currently we're not fully out of. And so, again, you know, this is not the time to cut bodies. This is the time to really have the necessary workers to, you know, make sure that they're keeping themselves safe, first of all, but also keeping the public safe and the clients that are going to be returning to these hotels at some point.
Sure. What about the climate for immigrants today? As you know, our previous president wasn't very friendly on immigration and was really big on deportation. How has that changed in the Midwest, in Chicago specifically?
Well, I could tell you since Trump has left office, there's not a direct attack coming from the very top towards immigrant and the hostility and, you know, that communities of color, particularly immigrants, felt during the Trump administration. That tone has changed. And, of course, that varies depending on what city and what state you're in. So we have seen a change, a positive change, particularly around during the Trump era where the no-match letters became such a big issue. I don't know if you're familiar with that issue, but this is the Social Security Administration sending out notices that there's something wrong with, you know, with your Social Security number or your information. And it could simply be that I got married and changed my last name, and that's why those notices come out. Well, employers were taking advantage of that and firing unjustly, firing thousands and thousands of immigrants throughout the country. And so that has stopped, and rightly so, because that's not the best effective way to administer that. And so we've seen a big difference in the last, obviously, since Biden got elected. But there's so much more work to do. And the reality is that until we have immigration reform for everyone, for over 12 million workers and 12 million immigrants, that's not, you know, they're still very vulnerable and they continue to be taken advantage of. And so it's, you know, we'll continue at Arise Chicago to fight for immigration reform. And then locally, it matters what we do locally and the laws that are passed locally, you know, so that is something that we are focused on as well.
Key takeaway to what you just said, there's still plenty of work to do. That is for sure. ArriseChicago.org is a website. Laura, we got about a minute and a half left. Anything that you can tell our listeners as far as what you'd like to accomplish, your main goals right now? Can you tell us?
Well, ultimately, we want to continue to support workers and make sure that they know their rights. But there's one key component that Arise does focus on, and that is any opportunity that we have, we want to make sure workers organize in the union, because we know ultimately that's the number one protection, and we've done that. We've incubated unions at Arise Chicago and have worked closely with unions like UFCW. And so our partnership with unions are crucial, particularly now more than ever, where workers are seeking help and seeking protections. And this is a time that unions should partner up with Arise Chicago and other worker centers to organize workers and make sure they have a union at the end of the day. Because while we're successful in recovering wage theft in many cases, and workers have, you know, we have seen, you know, what the benefits of them standing up for themselves, but ultimately that union contract is what's going to make a difference. And so we're committed at Arise Chicago to making sure that workers join the union. And we hope that our union brothers and sisters cooperate with us in making sure that happens.
Amen to that. Laura, thank you so much for what you do. Laura Garza, who's affiliated with ArriseChicago.org, ArriseChicago.org. You keep up the fight. Keep in touch with us, okay?
Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Kentucky AFL-CIO and the Atlanta Homeless Union. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.